Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
46% of Americans expect to leave behind financial obligations when they pass away. So it's crucial to make sure your family is financially protected. Policy Genius helps you find the right life insurance coverage by comparing options from America's top insurers with help from licensed, award-winning agents. Secure your financial future with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get free life insurance quotes in just a few clicks. That's policygenius.com.
Hey, this is Tyler.
And this is Jack.
And this is KC.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
What's happening, everybody? It is October 23rd. The wind is blowing out of the north-northwest at 10 to 15 miles an hour. And the temperatures are steadily declining. It's overcast. And we're looking at maybe like 50 degrees, 52 degrees, and it's declining slowly. Jack and I have made the trip up to Illinois, and we spent the morning scouting a particular several areas trying to find deer. It was pretty warm this morning, probably close to 70, and the cold front has moved in the middle of the day. And so Jack and I decide that the best way for us to have an opportunity to buck this evening is to head to a particular location where we've got a trail camera sitting over a scrape, and it's been there for quite some time. So with that, we pull up at about 1:45, maybe 2:00 p.m. and we get all our stuff. It's pretty much packed, but we get it on, packs on, cameras ready to roll, bow is in the hand, got the sticks in my other hand, and we take off walking. The ground is a little bit wet because we had a little rain come in when the north front hit all that warm, humid air. And we start heading in on the edge of this bean field. And when I say in, I'm talking about on some public land here in Illinois, going to this scrape. We go down the edge of this bean field for quite some way, and we get to pretty close to where we think the stand location is going to be. And we are kind of on the backside of this little small knob in between two kind of tree lines, kind of at an intersection of where two fields and two blocks of timber kind of meet. And the wind all of a sudden hits me in the back of the neck, and I'm like, no, this is not good. So we stop for a second. I pull out the wind indicator, which is milkweed that I've got. Casey and I have been storing up all summer. And I let a couple go, and they do some weird things. But after a few seconds, I can see that they're drifting in the correct direction. And so it's just a swirl on the back of this little hill. So we peek over the hill, drop in on the edge of the next bean field about 30 yards and pop into the woods through the briars and the edge of the timber. We work down through the timber in this draw that leads into a pond, skirt the edge of the pond, which is connected to a slough that is dry for maybe 100 or 120 yards to the west. and then it becomes, it has water in it there down to the west a little bit. There's a few deer tracks around. It doesn't look just beat up, but we get to the scrape, or we're getting close to the scrape, and I'm using Onyx that we had it marked there, and I see the camera. And so I check the camera, and it's the Exodus Lift, so it's got a screen, so I can actually check it right there. And we've got it on video mode, so not thinking too much about this, I realize, or I think that there's not a whole lot on the camera after I scan through all the videos, because I'm looking at thumbnails, I'm not actually watching the videos. So what I do is I change cards, the batteries are still good, because my boy Jay Kofer put lithiums in there, and we end up closing the camera back up. I look over at the scrape hardly looks used, and so I go over and I pee in it, and then walk back out, meet Jack right on the edge of the little opening there, and we're kind of on the edge of the slough. I had kind of seen a tree that I thought would be good. We get over to it. This tree is pretty close, like 13 yards from the scrape, and we proceed to put sticks on this tree. There's not a whole lot of branches on it, not a whole lot of cover, but I think I can get pretty high up in it, and it's the only opportunity here in late October for me to get a good clear shot at the scrape. And then it gave me a couple other shots in different directions as well, but everything was going to be super tight quarters, and we probably weren't going to see deer until they were within 25 yards of us, unless we got real lucky. Also, with the rain on the ground, it was going to be hard to even hear them coming, so we knew we were going to have to be still. So we climb up in the tree and get set for the evening pretty early, and I felt pretty good about it. The wind seemed good and everything. And so with that, KC, talk a little bit about how that camera got there and what we had seen on that camera and what I was intending to do that night.
Okay, so this is a place, one of the many that we scouted this summer with intentions of possibly heading to Illinois and going hunting in October, doing exactly what you're doing. We went to Illinois, met up with our buddies Anthony and Sean and Jake. Anthony and Sean, you've heard them on podcasts, as well as Jake Hofer from Exodus Trail Cameras. And we went and scouted this place. And then Tyler and I went back later in the summer and scouted a few more, trying to make sure that if we did go to Illinois, that we were prepared and willing to spend the high tag price to go there. Because we wanted to make sure we had a good enough spot to go to. So took a couple trips and decided that this place was worth it. It was worth going and spending a pretty high amount on a tag, on an out-of-state tag to go hunt. We scouted this place and really just tore it up for about 10 hours that day, I believe, just all over this piece of public. Had five guys with boots on the ground using all of their knowledge, everything they know about deer, to try to decide where was the best place to hang a couple trail cameras and put markers out, drop pins on X for possible hunting locations and other things that are good to denote. So what had happened is that Tyler and Jake and I had split up and worked through a section of timber, and we're all going to meet at a junction at one end of it. And as we were working through, I think somehow or another, I end up being the guy in the middle, and then y'all, Jake and Tyler, were working the perimeters, and we all found good stuff. But in particular, I noticed that there was a patch of bare dirt right in the middle of this block of timber, and there were probably five different trails that came into this bare dirt.
You the man.
I said, this is probably a scrape. And I was looking, there's a licking branch. There's, like Tyler said, that slough and pond there that kind of make a barrier of sorts. And then some ag fields around, and it just makes sense. And I didn't think too much of it, but I was like, I'm going to tell them about that. So Tyra and Jake and I all work through, and we meet back up underneath the mulberry tree. If you don't know, there's a specific cultivar of mulberry called the Illinois Everberry, or Illinois Everberry. I guess they don't have the S there. And I believe we found a wild one there, and we ate mulberries, and we talked about what we saw. We'd all seen quite a few rubs, a decent amount of deer tracks, trails, and just really good stuff. I don't think anybody I think I found a tip of an antler shed at some point in time, like from deer fighting.
Just the tip, though, right?
Just the tip, not the whole thing. I think either – well, we've also seen this before where tractors run over them and you just end up with just the tip of it. But we meet back up, and we were discussing where we should hang another Exodus trail camera. And we were kind of talking about going to another place on the property there and looking around, and we end up doing that. But I mentioned to Jake – hey man, look at this, you know, on my Onyx here, and I show him the pin I dropped on that scrape and said, this looks like it still might be getting used. And this is what, late June or early July, Tyler? I don't remember for sure, somewhere in there.
I want to say, yeah, that's going to be about the right timeline. And and you also had taken a picture to show Jake, right?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I'm taking a picture because you can do that now. You can add that picture onto your Onyx pins, you know, kind of to kind of explain, you know, what you really were looking at there. And right away, I see Jake's eyes like light up. And that's the kind of guy Jake is. He has a very expressive face, so it's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, yeah, we got to go look at that, you know. And that was pretty good Midwestern accent. I wasn't making fun of him, but that was pretty positive.
It wasn't too extravagant either. Like, it's just a little bit, you know.
Yeah. But particular way of saying things.
yes, for sure.
So we all kind of convene and also show Sean and Anthony the mulberry tree. And we leave the privates there to eat mulberries and to go continue scouting.
The hunting privates, that is.
The hunting privates, yes. They actually aren't privates. So I believe they're both officers. But we call them that endearingly. They go to scout another woodblock, and we're gonna all meet back up. You know, we kind of dropped a pin, we're gonna all meet back up, we're gonna pick them up in the truck. You, Jake, and I head back to that scrape to evaluate and see what he has to think about it, because Jake is an Illinois native, and he really has a good grasp on the deer of that state and of kind of that central Midwest area.
But he's not an American native.
No, he's not. We established that. No. You look at Jake and you think that he has some Native American in him. He says, absolutely not. It's crazy. Anyways, we head back into that scrape, and he's looking at us like, oh yeah, man, this is awesome. This is good. And we start kind of trying to establish maybe a game plan. I don't know, what do you call this, where you find a bit of deer sign or some type of habitat deer are using, and you start trying to put the puzzle together about what deer, how they are habitating the area.
Yeah,
you know, there's probably got to be a good name for it, but kind of the deer map. Let's just call it the deer map. We start deer mapping.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, so, I always say putting the puzzle together. You know, that's your deer map. You just said it. So yeah, I mean. But, yeah, that's essentially what we were doing, yeah.
Yeah, we're drawing the deer map. We're standing at the scrape. We're evaluating which direction the trails are going and what they're leading to. We actually start following a few trails around. Some of the trails lead up kind of on this hillside. When I say hillside, it's not like a giant, like, land feature. We're talking more of like a 30-foot rise kind of that leads up to an ag field kind of thing. It's not, you know, not anything big, but it's very thick and could be bedding. There's trails heading back away from the scrape the other direction that are definitely heading back to some bedding, possibly some oaks. Just it's really like what you might call a hub area, even dare I say a DMA, a deer movement area, but there is a scrape and there are trails because we're dealing with big Midwestern deer that do all the glorious things that we want whitetails to do.
Yep.
Right. So we decide to hang this camera. Well, Jake has a lone wolf stick with him or something, so we can get up pretty high. We hang this camera probably 10 foot off the ground, point it down at the scrape. I think we all decide to add some mature buck urine to the scrape.
Alpha, as I may add.
Alpha, yeah, lone wolf, yeah, for sure. Alpha, well, alpha urine.
I was just saying alpha male, you know.
Alpha male, in general. Yeah. So we do that, set the trail camera on video mode, and kind of take Jake's advice on that, on what to do there, and head out and scout a few more places and hang another trail camera or two. But constantly from that day forward, Tyler and I probably on a weekly basis would talk about that scrape and would discuss what's going on there and who's there and what's checking it and how early is it lighting up and what's going on, just because it felt like a special area, especially when a big buck killer like Jake Hofer is excited about it. That gets, you know, some Texas boys real excited, because if you got a guy from a big buck state who's excited about a spot, to some guys who aren't from big buck areas, then you know, like, okay, this is the place. Yeah. Let's go.
Let me add that Jake legitimately chases a Boone and Crockett deer like every single year.
Absolutely. So. And also has opportunities at 7.5-year-old plus type deer pretty often.
So, I mean,
how old was the deer he shot last year? Like 9 or 10, something? It was like real
10. 10.5, dude. 10? Yep.
Yeah, 10.5. Mm-hmm. Big Bob style. Man.
He's chasing 8.5 this year.
That gummit, man.
Yep.
Big deer. When that guy who hunts private land a lot and has opportunity at really old big deer gets excited about a public land spot, you know it's pretty good, right? Mm-hmm. And he's talking about, like, man, oh, I just love tearing this apart. You know, this guy or that guy could really tear it apart. We're like, well, let's just tear it apart. What shall we say?
So give ourselves a chance to do it well.
Yeah, give us a chance to just tear this sucker up, marsh bedding style. Let's see. I guess we can probably fast forward a little bit to a card pool, correct? Our buddy Anthony, A-Dub, Tony, whatever you want to call him, depending on the day, he went up there probably late August and pulled cards. Is that right?
I think that's right.
Yeah, he pulled cards in late August. Got
maybe in mid-August.
Somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. And we got some really cool stuff on trail camera, really awesome things happening. I'll start out with the least deery and we'll work to the most deery. I do remember that there was a video on there of, I think, a bobcat catching a squirrel. Yeah. Is that right?
Yep.
Yep. And then maybe there's a video of an owl on there or something.
Yeah, I think you're right.
We had deer using the scrape in the summertime, not really scraping per se, but it was a community licking branch, right? Which, quite honestly, I've only ever seen one of those in my life in Texas. And it seems like when you go to the Midwest, it's something that's used a lot more often.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I know it's the gregarious nature of deer, right, that make them do it. But it's very strange to me how, like, there's a tripping point, or, you know, there's a trigger somewhere along the line that say, I need to start peeing here. You know, it's kind of a weird deal. But they were going in using the licking branch, and then things got real interesting because two really big deer show up on that camera. And not just show up, frequent, I would say. Two really big deer frequent that camera. Big bucks in velvet.
In daytime.
One, in the daytime. One being a giant 6x4.
We're not sure. We're not sure that this deer is a 6x4. After reviewing some footage recently, I think he may be a 5.
Yeah.
But that makes me want to call him a 6x4 even more, I think. So let's just continue with that name as the deer's name. How about?
All right. Sounds good.
But I don't want people to get the wrong impression and think that we're idiots. So.
That's which all right. They already probably if you can hang did. A ring on it, he's probably a 13x12 or something like that, you know. And we'll call him 6x4. That's his name.
Yep.
And then a giant 6-point, which a lot of people might be like, oh, that dude doesn't score as high. But Tyler and I both, and I'm sure Jack now too.
Anthony.
Oh, nothing like, dude, a big 6-point is so cool.
Yeah.
Because it's one of two things. He might not have great genetics and he never, you know, grows threes, and that's cool because he gets big. Or maybe he's so old that he's lost his G3s.
That's what happens just, a lot, man, I think.
Yeah. Yep. They, you know, they're big eights with smaller G3s, and they end up, you know, losing them as they get older, and they just end up being toads, man. And that's exactly what this deer was. Yep. And I think y'all said he actually, we're going to call him the six, but he might have a split on his brow or something like that.
He's a mainframe six, you know, but he's got a split on his brow, man, that just lets you know.
A big, massive deer.
Yeah, he's gnarly, you know. So.
Yeah. And not just those two, but there's quite a few other bucks on there, which makes you real excited. You know, you start – what I really like to see on an out-of-state property is a good age structure, and that's what I felt like you could see there, because that tells me – you know, maybe from year to year somewhere you get some pressure or whatever. But if a property has good age structure, then it kind of tells me that there's not more pressure than the herd can handle. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, where we went in South Dakota this year, it didn't seem that way. It kind of seemed like there's a lot of young deer, a lot of one-year-olds, maybe a few two-year-olds, and then maybe a couple that slipped through. And that's one of the things you find a lot of times in a place that has a pretty liberal rifle season or gun season of some sort.
Yeah.
But, you
that's
know,
not here though, you know, and,
no,
and, it, and there's just so much land in this area that it would take a lot of pressure to really put a hurting on, on those deer, you know?
Yeah, dude. Like there's so much. Mm-hmm. And that's nice about going to a place that has a bunch of, you know, public that, it would take a lot of hunters just to make enough pressure. Whereas, like in Texas, you know, it doesn't take a lot of hunters to fill it up. But, but that's part of the reason too, is that it's expensive to go hunt there. You know, so kind of it's hard to commit to a place that's a long way from home and spend that money. But from that point on, that camera set until October 23rd.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I couldn't see dates on the screen, I think because of the way it was formatted or something, but like it was just kind of too small for me to see on that screen. But
yeah,
I could definitely tell that old 6x4 was in there at some point. One of the thumbs had him on it. Mm-hmm. So, and let me tell you, from just a small little thumbnail screen picture, I could tell he had topped out really nicely.
Like, yeah,
you know, we had pictures of him or video of him during mid-July, I think, was kind of the main run of video that we had from him. And he was wide, but, you know, he had the four on the one side was kind of a weak side. And he seemed kind of short in his tines, but it was mid-July. Well, he ended up topping out pretty nicely. So I was pretty excited, you know. I'm like, the weather's good. I got old Hofer over here telling me, you know, oh, dude, you know, this is between this date in late October on a cold front, man. This is when it happens. This is when I get bucks finally checking in the daylight and this and that, you know. And so I'm kind of hyped, and like there's a big part of me that like this is the way I am on hunts. I did the same thing in South Dakota. Is there's a huge part of me that knows when my odds are really, really good, but I always question myself, and there's always these like factors that you can't manage, like hunter pressure or hikers or horse riders or whatever it might be,
or terrible winds the whole time you're on a trip, you know, like that kind of stuff,
or a swirling wind in an area, or anything, any little thing, or just not even having a tree in the right spot to hang out of, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, all these little factors that when you're going in on a hunt that you feel really good about, they kind of give me a lot of anxiousness, because I know that if everything sets up well, I stand a really good chance. But if it kind of gives me this butterfly that like, man, if one thing is wrong, it could ruin this really great chance for me to kill. You know, if I kill a 6x4, it's the biggest buck of my life, probably, you know, possibly for sure. the biggest one side, you know. So anyway, just big deer. So I'm very excited, and I know deep down that, like, I pretty much know I can make this work, and we're going to get in here, and all we need is a deer to do what they're supposed to do. And in the Midwest, a lot of times they do what they're supposed to do. And you know, it's exciting.
And you and I have been texting and hyping about the day the whole time. And in fact, so a little backstory I should have probably thrown in there. This, you and Jack go on this mission with just you two. I'd stay at the house. I kind of didn't have money for a tag, and end up having a sick baby, have COVID in the family. So it was probably just not a great time for me to leave home. Kind of had to take care of some people, take care of my baby, and all this kind of stuff, which it's the real world, right? And that's what a lot of guys face, is a lot of real world stuff. But you and I have been scheming and game planning. I was just so stoked for you to be there. And I love to do this when you get to hunt, when I don't, is just live vicariously through you. And I'm kind of like, okay, Tyler, it's been 5 minutes since you sent me a picture. Would you please let me know what you're seeing? You know? But I call you because the cold front, the impending cold front, actually hit here before it hit in Illinois, which is kind of strange. But it was like 15 minutes probably. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, dude, it's here. It's 55. I'm blowing 20 out of the north, you know. And y'all are at the place you're staying, and you say, well, it's not here quite yet. And then, like, in no time, you're like, it's her.
Yeah.
So we're hyping and all, and ends up, like you said, y'all find your tree. We're texting and stuff along the way. I hadn't heard from you for a little bit, but then we were talking, and I'm getting around to the odds thing that you were talking about, and like the little factors.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember what you said exactly. I could go look it up. I might even screenshot this to save it because it's kind of fun. But you say something like, man, I don't feel super awesome about it, but there's a 2% chance that a big buck comes in here tonight. And something like that. I know the 2% chance part was in there, but my reply, cause I'm an optimist to a fault, pretty often, is I say that's a 1 in 50 chance. And I know you're going to have more than 50 sits in a tree this year. So, and that's a pretty good way to look at it, in my opinion. And I believe, that was probably about our last communication until later in the evening.
Yeah. So, we were texting a little bit because I didn't feel, I gave it a 2% chance because the camera didn't seem like it was lighting up. Like I said, I went through and I saw all these thumbnails, and there wasn't deer in some of them, and there was a little buck in some of them, and then there was a doe, and I'm like, man, there's only one instance where a shooter buck comes through, which was not actually the truth after I reviewed this trail camera pull on the computer later on. But anyway, so with that in mind, I'm sitting in the tree. You and I kind of get done texting. It's still, you know, we got in plenty early because I knew, you know, it's just one of those days, man, where you're like, you got to get in early, you got to do things right. And if you do, it could really pay off. And so I end up sitting there kind of thinking, man, with the lack of trail camera, you know, with lack of the trail camera, you know, just kind of being dead, it seems like, and not having a whole lot going on around here. The scrape had leaves in it, you know, and didn't look like it was too eat up. And I'm like, man, I guess I'm going to go ahead and think about, because I always think about on an evening hunt, if I'm going to pull my stands or not. So I had to figure out where I'm going to hunt in the morning, because if I'm not going to pull my stands, or if I'm going to hunt the same area, I'd like to leave my stands, because we hardly ever get to do that. And that's like, you want to talk about a nice hunt, it's to walk in and not have to set sticks in the stand and climb up a tree and put your lineman's rope on, you know, 100 times. And it's what we really would like to happen. So every time I'm sitting there in the evening, I'm trying to figure out where I'm going in the morning while it's kind of dead, so that I can, you know, make everything kind of work for me that afternoon, I guess. So
yeah,
I'm map scouting, and I've got, like, you know, as many layers as I've had on all year, pretty much. And dude, I got chilled, man, because the wind was just hitting pretty good up in that tree. Like I said, there wasn't a bunch of limbs on it. There wasn't a whole lot of trees, like, upwind of us either. And we were pretty high up, you know, for me at least, probably like 15 foot, you know, so we're we're up there pretty good, 15, 16 foot maybe a little bit more. And and so anyway, my hands get real cold and I'm like, okay, I need to quit. I've been map scouting for like 45 minutes, you know, trying to figure out where I'm going in the morning on the particular wind, and my hands get real cold. So I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna put it in my pocket and chill a little bit. And I, you know, Jack and I had talked about things, and I told him, I had Jack set up on my right, and I'm a right-handed shooter, right? So I had Jack set up on my right and kind of just slightly about a foot above me or so. And
yeah. Explain that a little bit more. Why was he set up on your right as an archery hunter, the way you're positioned?
Yeah, because we're sitting in you assume that a guy that shoots right-handed is going to shoot best, most easily to his left. So we put Jack on the right so he stays out of the way of any shots for the most part.
And y'all are diaper swinging, right?
We are diaper swinging. And I told Jack, I said, okay, here's the deal. We could barely see down that slough. We could see water down to, you know, to the west and the east, essentially. We got a north wind. And I said, okay, here's what's going to happen is, in my opinion, deer are going to come from back behind me. So I was like, we got to be keeping our eye that direction big time. I said, also, they could come from kind of out in front of me, more to my left, which is still kind of almost behind me to my left a little bit. There's a couple of different areas I'm thinking they're probably coming from, right? And then I said, there's also a chance that they come from straight on ahead of me as well. But that's the same direction of travel. It's just from the opposite direction. And so, or same plane, I guess. So anyway, we had had rain, like I said earlier in the podcast, and we're sitting there for a while, and it starts to get where you're like, okay, it's getting a little bit darker. You know, you can tell it's not as bright as it was on an overcast day. Yeah. You know, it's just dark.
Real quick, I want to get Jack's, because Jack is a pretty optimistic guy I found too in the woods. Jack, how are you feeling right now about this place?
From what Tyler said earlier in the day, it seemed pretty good. And getting up, the wind and everything seemed pretty good. It was pretty cold, and it looked like a perfect deer day, that's for sure.
Yeah,
it
did. Yeah.
And I felt good. I felt good about it. I thought we were going to see some deer for sure.
Good.
So our optimism is pretty high overall as a team. And anyway, we get kind of settled, you know, it starts to get a little bit darker, and thinking, man, it's probably getting, you know, pretty close to deer time. We got, you know, pretty still. All of a sudden, I'm sitting there looking kind of straight forward, and I got this scrape. The scrape is pretty much, it's on my left, but it's kind of out in front of me. And all of a sudden, straight down to my left at like, we're going to call this 8 yards because it's kind of a trail. It's not really like you wouldn't see it as a trail. You'd see it more as a DMA because it's not beat in or anything. But could tell this is where I had said the deer would come from. And it's right under us, and it's at like 8 yards. So I see a deer at 8 yards. I mean, I knew that it was going to be 25 yards before we saw anything. And I told Jack, dude, you won't hear them today with as wet as the leaves are, you know. It's crazy. Like, even when the leaves are dry, dude, a deer can get within 20 yards of you and you never hear it. It's just crazy. It's just, that's what a small footprint does for you, I think, you know. But anyway, this deer is right there. And I'm like, hey, right here, buck. And it's a kind of a basket rack 7 that's been in there a bunch. I saw him on the camera and when I, you know, scrolled the pictures. And so he's coming right at the scrape, and he goes up to the scrape, and he, you know, like I was like, he gets to the scrape, he starts doing all the scraping things, and he's, you know, smelling around and everything, and Jack's getting some footage, and I was like, dude, I was like, if that could have just been the big 6x4 Yeah, I had a quartering way at 13 yards, you know what I mean, when he went up to the scrape. It was like dead meat, you know what I mean? So anyway, he does all the scraping stuff, and then he kind of goes over the camera and he starts smelling. And he basically, over the course of the next few minutes, smells everything in there that we had touched, you know, pretty much, and where we had walked in to the camera and everything.
And y'all were all rubber booted out too, right?
I was, and I left Jack kind of back by the slough to check the camera. So, but he ended up working all the way out to the slough and smelling.
Yeah.
You know, he was smelling it curiously. I don't know how like a 5-year-old buck reacts to that, but
he kept
like
bobbing his head up and down and sideways, looking up and down with his nose in the air, trying to smell us. You could definitely tell he was.
He ended up looking up at us when he got out to the slough and did the whole bob thing that they do. Because we're in
just
a tree,
like that, just like that 2-year-old from Kansas last year, the same exact type.
I mean, and we're in a tree that, like I said, doesn't have a whole lot of cover, and it's close to this scrape, but it's the only tree I can get a shot to the scrape from, really. And we actually have, like you talked about, there's a hill that had a lot of bedding on it, and that hill is kind of up behind us from the scrape, and therefore there are some big trees that still have a lot of leaves on them behind, like, that we would literally not, I mean, we wouldn't be silhouetted from the scrape at all, you know. And like I said, he never silhouetted us from the scrape or anything, or never saw us, but he looked up at us when he got to the slough in a little different location, and then disregarded us pretty quickly, went back to smelling all kinds of stuff. He kind of works his way back over close to the scrape, and all of a sudden I hear like a, is, I'll try to do it, but it's almost like a, just like that. And it was a sound, it was a little bit different like that than that, but it was just a short burst. And I said, it's another deer. So I was like, you know, I was like, it's likely a buck, get ready. And so this buck, this little buck, we can barely see him, dude. He's at like 20 yards. We can't even really see this buck at times. Like, we're not sure if he's still there or if he's like gone off or whatever, this little one. So anyway, he comes kind of back across the scrape and walks like 20, 25 yards, and he's looking, ears perked, towards the west from the other direction that I thought deer might come from. And I'm like, you know, I told him it was probably a buck. So anyway, the deer goes and kind of disappears into the brush right there, headed west after he looked for a second. And we hear like one clank of antlers. And I'm like, I bet you, I told Jack, I said, I bet it's a big buck. Because that, you know, this time of year when they're doing a lot of like sparring type stuff, the big bucks a lot of times they'll entertain like a young buck, just like jacking with them for a second, you know?
Yeah, isn't that weird? It's kind of like they're like mentors or something.
Yeah, it is. It's weird, man. And I can almost guarantee that's what happened. That little buck went over there and just tapped his horns and then kind of, you know, went off or whatever. No big deal. And so anyway, probably a minute after that happened, Jack goes, big buck right behind you, coming same trail. And I'm like, dadgummit, you know, like, this is, I can't see it because it's behind me, you know. And I'm like, can I move? And he's like, you're good. So I go to grab my bow, which is in front of me. I grab it. I'm kind of like, we're kind of communicating a little bit about like when I can move and when I can't and everything. And so I end up getting my bow kind of down ready or whatever. And I had turned my head a little bit. And as I'm getting my bow, Jack goes, there's two of them, two big bucks. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is crazy, dude.
So,
I know, dude. I'm like, I can't see any of this, you know. And Jack's like watching it all or whatever. And so he goes.
The funny thing is, like, it's not that Jack has a different perception of big bucks than us, but we haven't hunted with Jack enough to know exactly what that means. That could mean a 190, or that could mean like you know, something else, you know, like
a 130 or whatever. Yeah, exactly.
Like, and honestly, I would say big buck when I saw 132.
Sure.
But like, with him not knowing the deer that are on the trail camera, he can't say it's a 6x4,
right,
or it's the big 6-point, you know. Like, he just says big buck. So it's like your mind is going wild, I'm sure, as to what this is.
Dude, when he says there's two of them, I'm for sure one of them's a 6x4 at that point. Like, it's in my mind, I know. You know what I mean? Like, it's like no doubt, because he's on there a bunch, and he's in the daylight quite a bit. He's like a homebody right there, you know?
Well, that's one of the nice things about, like, y'all seeing that little 7-point you saw. when I see deer that I know from trail camera, especially if it's earlier where bucks might still be kind of together, it's like, okay, who'd you bring with you, sir?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I know, dude. That's where, you know, we had already seen one that we knew, and I'm thinking, man, if one of these bucks are, he said both of them are big, and one of them's got to be a 6x4, and I'm like, so at this point, I'm like, I know I'm shooting, you know what I mean? It ain't no question of, is this really a big buck, or is it a 115 that I may not want to shoot right now, or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, he goes, he's like, it's coming down the same trail. He's like, shoot the one in the back. And at that point, I'm like, okay, if this is a question, these are two giants. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
my goodness.
If this is a question as to which, you know, like, there's two big ones here for sure. If he's telling me don't shoot the first one to come out, it's like, that's a good buck, but shoot the one in the back. So, anyway, I know you gotta get to church here, so I'm going to try to make this story go a little bit faster. But I had turned my head a little bit, real slow, and I see one of the bucks, and he's at about 25 yards, maybe. At least it seemed that way in this thick stuff. And
they're about to fight.
And Jack, okay, so Jack said that one of them, later on, he told me that one of them was running or jogging towards the other one, and the one that I'm seeing at this point is like bristled up. He's ready to bow up and fight. So like it's about to happen, right?
Ooh.
So, like I said, I turned my head a little bit, and I could see this buck. And the first thing I notice is, I mean, like, the first thing I could see is plain and obvious, giant eight point. And I'm like, oh, my toad daddy Cephas. And so I'm sitting there looking at him, and he's like, this one's coming right here. And so I'm like, can I turn my head? And he's like, yeah. And so I turned my head very slowly. And, I'm talking, I don't know. I turned it like 25 degrees, you know, like barely turned it. And I look down, and on that 8-yard trail is the 6x4 at 8 yards looking.
Oh my goodness.
Looking directly at us, me in particular, I feel like. And so, and what had happened is when I assessed this later, he had a silhouetted, is the only place in there wasn't trees as back cover.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, dude comes in, he's a wily old buck, had it silhouetted. So he's locked up, he's in this thick stuff, dude, but I could have shot him right there if he hadn't seen us and he was just standing there. But he's looking at us, and so I'm just looking right back at him, and I can't even see his antlers except for about 8 inches of the main beams. But I know the way he's shaped, I know it's him. And he has his pegged. At this point, I know I've been around some pretty big old bucks, and I know that it's probably game over. And so, in the back of my mind, my thoughts are, when he busts out, I gotta draw and try to shoot that 8 point at 25 yards or whatever, if I can get a shot, or just see what happens. You know, I got it in my mind that I'm probably not shooting this deer, but there's another option here, right? And the buck turns his head and takes off dead sprint directly at the 8 point at 25 yards.
Oh.
And wigs everybody out, me including me and Jack, I think. Jack has been recording this whole time. And when that buck takes off running, Jack can't really see around the tree and me what's going on. And so I think he stops recording. I haven't looked at a bunch of footage yet. I think he stops recording. And that buck runs right at the 8 point. The 8 point freaks out, goes to the left, does this little semicircle, and ends up standing looking back at where that buck just went, so away from us, at 8 yards where that buck just vacated.
Oh my goodness.
And he's looking away, and I'm like, oh my goodness, thank you. And so I get my bow back quick at that point, and he's looking away, and I'm like, and it's a pretty good wind still, and I'm like, Jack, I didn't say Jack, but I was like, are you recording? And I'm whispering this, obviously. He says, I can't hear you. I said, are you recording? And he still couldn't hear me. I said it 3 times, and the last time he couldn't hear me, and I said it loud on the 4th time, a little bit louder, and just to, like, hey, get the camera on, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I said it loud enough that the buck heard me. And when he turned his head around towards me, I put the 20 on the spot, and I donked him with a day six, and he ran off, and he was in thick stuff. I had to shoot through, like, a couple of branches and stuff, but I knew at that range with the stuff, with the branches being close to him, I was like, it's, I mean, heavy arrow, fixed blade, I'm doing it, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And so I put it on him, and I shoot. He takes off running, disappears real quick, and I'm like, I didn't know what had happened. But when the arrow went down into the brush, I lost it completely. Couldn't see it.
Oh, no.
And so I thought I pulled it right. And so, like, the celebration, you'll see it on the video. If you subscribe on our YouTube channel, and if you don't, do that, please. But if you subscribe on our YouTube channel, you will see me not be as excited as you would expect. Because I'm just freaking out, like, did I just miss that deer at 8 yards? And I start getting my binos out. I'm looking for the arrow. Can't see it. I'm like, oh, my goodness.
I thought he hit him.
Yeah, Jack thought, he goes, no, you hit him for sure, dude. Like, he heard it, you know, because he couldn't see it. And he was actually probably extremely shocked that I even shot.
Yeah,
he thought I was just drawn, you know, and that I was asking if I could let down.
Something like that. Yeah. Like, if a buck came and stopped at a... I don't know.
Yeah, so, you know, that he didn't know that that other buck was at 8 yards. So,
oh, man.
Yeah, so things, you know, were tough for sure. And that's just the way it goes, man. When you go in on public land, you bomb in, you try to find a tree, and you get two guys in it and try to kill giant five-year-old deer, sometimes you just get what you can take, man. So
that's it, dude. Yeah, video is a secondary at that point. Oh, you know, heck, it's just, dude. Let's get the thing done.
Yeah, so anyway, I end up getting down and going over to try to see if I can find that arrow, because I cannot get it scoped out with the glasses. And I'm thinking, dude, I'm such an idiot. I missed him, and I buried that day six all the way through to the fletchings in the dirt. And that's why I can't see it. You know what I mean? And so I get over there to where I thought he was standing. It was so thick and confusing. But I get over there where I thought he was standing, and, dude, I'm talking, as soon as I stepped where he was standing, there was blood. And I'm like,
oh my goodness.
Oh, man, dude. I'm like, I look up at Jack and I'm pumping my fist. Like, there's a pretty, for a first step after being shot, there was quite a bit of blood. And I'm like, oh, this is good, man. You know, the shot angle, basically where I put it was like in front. If you know anything about deer anatomy, the leg bone kind of goes straight up from the ground, and then it goes forward, and then there's a joint in the shoulder blade, the big blade paddle, goes kind of backwards and up at like a 45 from there. And so he's kind of quartered too. I put it in front of that shoulder blade, and that's where I pulled the trigger. Well, we find some blood, so I'm like, oh, man, I don't know. I don't have a clue where I hit him, so let's just get out of here. We're going to wait for Anthony. He's meeting us. And we're going to see, you know, if we can make some, you know, get his help and make something happen tonight. If not, you know, who knows what's going to happen. But anyway, wait on Anthony. He gets there. We get our stuff ready. We get deer cart out. We start getting ready to head in, and it starts raining, like, pretty decent. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me right now. So, you know, if you're a novice, the rain, you know, is very easily could wash the blood away, and there's no blood trail whatsoever, you know?
Yeah.
So we finally get in there. It's dark. It has rained, but it has stopped. And we start finding the blood pretty quickly, and we get to, like, a wall of vines, man, nasty. And Anthony's like, man, why don't you go around, see if you can find blood on the other side of this? And I was like, okay. So I take a big loop around, find blood, and I call them over. They come over. We're tracking. We find the arrow after, like, another 5 or 10 yards. And at that point, it looks good, because the arrow is super red. And then we notice that once the arrow fell out, that there is blood everywhere. And so what had happened is, I think that arrow went through, stuck in the ground, but it was still the knock was still inside of him. And so when he ran off, it took, you know, a couple of bounds for that arrow to fall out, and then it just it was like draining the bathtub, you know?
Yeah, and that's, like, you want to talk about all the different proponents or reasons to shoot a heavy arrow. The pass-through thing, I think, is, I mean, that's just number one for sure. me. Yeah. You know, and you're never guaranteed it. You know, you can bury up opposite shoulder or whatever, but like, man, if you can get a hole on the bottom side, or if you can get that second hole, it's twice the opportunity to have a blood trail.
Yeah, and it was, dude, it was. I mean, and also the heavy arrow and fixed blade gives me a reason to feel very comfortable about shooting about shooting an 8 yard quarter and two, you know, like hard yeah. quarter two. You know, I did miss the shoulder blade. I put it right where I wanted to, but mm-hmm. like, you know, even if I had hit the shoulder blade, there's a good chance that I'm getting in some good stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Anyway, long story short, we basically just walk the red carpet to him, and he had gone. Oh, he went like 50 yards, dude. I mean,
oh my goodness,
piled up.
Y'all didn't hear him fall?
No, it was so wet. Yeah, it was so wet, dude. Like we couldn't hear any deer running or walking or anything, man. It was crazy. Yeah. That was what I told Jack. I said if it had been dry, we'd have heard him crash, dude. But it was wet, and we didn't hear him. So, I mean,
you could barely hear him run off whenever he shot.
Yeah. And you couldn't see, you literally couldn't see more than 25 yards where we were at in almost any direction. There was just a few directions you could see further than that, but especially where they were coming from. And so, anyway, we found him, dude. And he, when I first saw him out of the, when I first turned my head and saw the buck and there were still two big bucks in there, I got a glimpse of him. And then I immediately started focusing on the buck that was coming in at 8 yards. So I never really, from that moment, till I shot him, and I shot him like I said in brush. I couldn't see his antlers when I shot him. I never saw his antlers again. I just knew he was a big eight. When we walked up on him, dude, it was like I could not believe how big he was, dude. And if you are listening and you've, you know, seen the social media posts, you know what I'm talking about. He is a huge framed eight point.
Yeah, you described it to me like a lot of times on these East Texas deer. Or, you know, other deer we shoot sometimes, like, you kind of have to be careful just because we're all kind of bigger dudes. And, you know, with that comes big hands. And if you put your hands on antlers the wrong way, sometimes it can kind of make them look puny just because.
You got to fingertip them.
Yeah, exactly. You got to hold them out there like they're, you know, like a special coin or something, you know. But this deer, they ain't none of that. It's mm-mm. grab it like it's a turkey leg, you
it
know,
is,
just
man.
Like grab a hold of that sucker, and you can tell. You posted a video on social media, and I'm sure this deer will make a few appearances on our social media in the future, and you'll probably get a good idea of this. But it's just massive, long tines, everything you could ever want from public land deer, man.
Yep,
grip it and rip it,
grip and rip. Jack,
rip them, dude.
Jack was like, you know, Jack was like, oh, he's dead. You know, we're in the tree. I'm like, dude, I don't know if I hit that deer. He's like, oh, you hit him, dude. This deer's dead. Like he's like, oh, no problem. This dude didn't even have
the
camera on.
Deer stand hot man. Dude.
He is, man.
He's the best. He
was right, man. He called it, you know. So
yeah.
Anyway, we, you know, for the next couple of days, I was able to do some scouting for all of us in the future. And man, that's the beauty of hunting together with a bunch of dudes. You know, like people, like I said, this, the solo thing is it's cool. I think it's a neat feat to not to rhyme or anything, but like that you could do something like that solo. But dude, I don't think I could have got that deer out of there by midnight if I had done it by myself, even, you know. But even just the scouting, dude, you scouted, you found the scrape, Jake provided the cameras, Anthony went and checked the cameras this summer and gave us intel and gave us a reason to go buy an expensive out-of-state tag.
Yep. Sean brought the summer sausage for lunch.
Yeah, dude, and fine summer sausage, you know? And also had the muscle, you know, just to blaze trails for us, you know? So.
That's right.
But it took a team, man. And then, you know, Jack to give me the optimism in this tree stand, you know. So and actually Jack saw the deer coming in. I mean, who knows, if I'm sitting there in that saddle by myself, there's a chance that I'm watching baby buck or something, or you know, looking at something off in the distance, and when a deer is at 8 yards behind me and I, you know, move my leg because it's falling asleep, and there he catches me and I never even see him or hear him because it's wet, you know.
For sure. You could have been eating a Pop-Tart. And
I definitely,
the deer just walks underneath you.
You know, that percentage is more like a 98% chance because I eat so many Pop-Tarts. So,
that's right, man.
Anyway.
Well, What an awesome, awesome buck, dude. He's just, I cannot wait for y'all to get home so I can touch those antlers. It's just, I remember you saying something else too. You said, there's no regret. Like, there's no part of you, and don't let me put words in your mouth, but there's no part of you that would have rather shot the other deer. Right?
Dude, after the recovery, for sure, I was jacked up. We were shaking so hard. But I was also, like, super just like, man, I don't know where this arrow went. I don't have a clue, you know. So a part of me is almost disappointed that I didn't know if I hit him or not and had this big-time doubt. But we were shaking out of excitement for sure. And then I never really thought about too much about, like, man, I wish I got a shot at the six before. But then when I got to the deer, this deer is every bit as impressive as the 6x4, if not more. Honestly, like, they were about to fight. Neither one of them were backing down, and they're both 5-year-old plus deer that are about to just get into each other. You know what I mean? And you know, 5.5s getting after it in the woods, and I'm sitting there, me and Jack are sitting there witnessing this, but they're about to get after it, and then all of a sudden, you know, we shanked one of them. So
I also, all of a sudden, Smoke City, Illinois.
Yeah. I also told you that the 6x4 looked a little thin.
Yeah.
Compared to that 8.
Yeah.
I think the 8 would have won the fight. If I was a betting man, I would have put money on the 8.
His neck was so, I mean, just beautiful deer. Beautiful, beautiful deer. Like, I told my dad, I texted him the video the next day, and I said, I may have just shot my biggest 8 point. And he was like, that's saying something. Because I've shot a big one before.
You got a big one on the wall. But your big 8's with a rifle, is that right?
Yep.
So this is definitely your biggest 8 with a bow and arrow.
Yeah,
right?
Definitely. 100%.
Yeah. You know, we've never put the old tape to nameless, and it's kind of been fun that way.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to be that way with every deer here on out, or
I don't know.
What's your thoughts?
I talked to Anthony about this because he was like, you know, Anthony shot a big deer on public last year. In Kansas, and you know, he was like, I still haven't measured that deer yet, you know, I know about what it's going to go because I've done it in my head probably, but
yeah,
he's like, I still haven't put a tape on it, and he's like, I don't really care to. I was like, man, I think really, you know, after you shoot a couple more deer, then going back and measuring is probably a cool idea. It's fun. I like measuring deer. I enjoy the process, and I enjoy just seeing what they are. It's like a little scientific research project, you know?
But for sure.
But I think it can ruin some things for you. It's because everybody's going to ask you what it scored. And so, like, if this deer doesn't go 150, am I going to be able to tell everybody without grimacing that it's a 147 or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, so, and I'm just saying any deer in particular could be that way, just a little shy of what you thought he was. So I don't want it to ruin it, but you shoot a couple more big deer in the next couple of years, it ain't going to matter to you then if he scores 147. You're going to still be proud of him, but you're kind of like, I know I can kill big deer and it's fun, you know? So I don't know. There's just kind of I kind of feel like I'll wait a while if I do, you know, but
yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I probably will put a string on that main beam because they look pretty long.
Yeah, I might score them while you're not there, just not tell you.
Feel free.
Jack, is that going to be the biggest deer that you film get shot this year?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
I love it.
Ooh. KC, I think coming up, we've got a couple of big deer that we might possibly get into for sure. So,
yeah.
But I'll tell you this.
I hope so, man.
You know, this deer, the frame of this deer is going to be hard to beat this year.
But I believe it.
You put a couple extra G3s out there or G4s out there in front, you may be able to beat that score this year. We're going to be chasing a deer that probably scores higher, man.
Absolutely, dude. Well, y'all get home safe and, man, like, honestly, a little less than 7 days from now, we're headed after more of them, dude.
Dude, big
it's
trip.
It's here.
It's going to be fun.
It is here, dude. We're going to make a big old swing and shoot us some big deer, dude.
Swing state, baby.
That's it.
Yep. So, anyway, dude, I didn't get to tell you the story until, you know, nearly 18 hours later because you were hunting and everything else, but... Mm-hmm. It was a fun hype fest, man, and you know, I don't think that things are going to be like that every year up there, but we're definitely going to keep going back and scouting different properties and trying to find spots, you know. I think that's the main thing is finding spots. So hopefully we can do that in the future, man. And appreciate everybody listening. Appreciate everybody commenting and congratulating as well on social media and that kind of thing. Make sure you follow us on those platforms and you subscribe to this podcast as well as YouTube, because the video is going to come out pretty soon here. So anyway, with that, remember, this is your element.
Live in it.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at the Meat Eater.com. Hope to see you at the show.